T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Mully and Hall, mornings live at 5 on Sports Radio 670 The Score. 670thescore.com, Chicago's sports station.
The 33-point quarter is not what we want in the fourth quarter. So we'll look at it and evaluate it. But I just thought there was times when we had plays that we could have made at the rim or open threes that didn't go. They have the same play on the other end, and it goes for them. That's just kind of part of the game. But our defense was pretty good. They averaged 56 or something points in the paint. They had 42.
You know, we're going to get there. You know, we make really good strides, and I feel like each game in parts of the game. But we have to figure out how to win. I think that's the hardest thing for a young team, is trying to figure out how to win.
Mully and Hall, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. You heard the voices there of Jim Boylan and Zach LaVine of the Chicago Bulls. They lose last night 112-99, and we're delighted to welcome in Kendall Gill, NBC Sports, their Bulls pre-halftime post-game show analyst, and of course a member of the Flying Illini and a very successful professional in his own right, including a stint with the Bulls. Hey, Kendall, how are you?
Hey, Kendall.
All right, guys, out here in this icy weather, so
be careful.
Yeah, it's slick going, buddy.
It is.
What did you make of that game last night? And I mean, I understand the defense kind of let them down late, but when you really think about where they're at, isn't that almost? I don't want to just be a guy that says tank and get the draft pick, but you know what? Why not just tank and get the draft pick?
Well, I think they've been playing games the past 3, 4, 5 games where they're competitive, but then in the end they lose games. I think that's the type of games that the fans and the management want at this point, because you're absolutely right. I mean, they need to be in position to get the draft pick in the top three. Now, the rules are different this year, where the team with the worst record, they don't necessarily have more of a chance to win the number one pick. The bottom three teams get a 14% chance each of getting the number one pick, but it's always good to be in that bottom three if you're going to go for a Zion Williamson or a John Morant, somebody like that, or RJ Barrett.
Kendall, the Bulls go on an 11-0 run late in the fourth quarter. You thought this was going to be a game down to the finish, and then they turn the ball over, and that's been a chronic problem. And I think especially when you see Chris Dunn protecting the basketball, or maybe not protecting the basketball well enough, it reinforces the doubt that you think the Bulls have in him. What happened with Chris Dunn? Where are you with him? I mean, obviously the fact that he can't finish has been an issue last year. John Paxson comes out publicly challenging him last week. Hasn't responded to that yet as you would have liked, but where are you with Chris Dunn, and can you count on him moving forward?
Well, the jury's still out on him. You look at him, he passes the eye test. I mean, very big point guard, 6'4", he's long-armed, rangy, athletic. But it's just something that is not clicking as a point guard. We all know coming out of college as the fifth pick, he was a scoring point guard, you know, not really necessarily a point guard that was able to distribute the basketball. And his role here is to distribute the basketball and get guys like Zach LaVine, Lauri Markkanen, now Otto Porter, into position to score. And most importantly, as you said, not turn the ball over in key situations, especially late in the game. And if you notice, now Zach is starting to handle the ball late in the games, because I think that Jim Boylan just doesn't have the confidence in Chris Dunn to take care of the ball. And also, hold on one second, guys. Hold on.
Sure.
Run the team and run offense is the way that you're supposed to run at the end of basketball games. I mean, that was a problem last year. it's a problem this year as well. I'm pulling for Chris Dunn, but he's got these last 20-plus games to make an impression, one on Jim Boylan and two, most importantly, on John for John Paxson and Gar Forman. Because, you know, going forward, that's what this team needs now. They need a point guard. They thought Chris Dunn was the point guard of the future when they made him a Jimmy Butler trade. But unfortunately, I don't think that they feel comfortable enough to say that Chris Dunn is our point guard of the future right now.
You know, I think that we've only seen a glimpse of Otto Porter Jr., but you knew he was a good player coming in, and he looks like – I know everyone's going to talk about the salary, and I get all of that, but the guy is a professional player, and he's an upgrade. He looks like he can play the position they got him to play, and we've seen, you know, maybe some wasted effort in terms of what he can do, but I like what I've seen.
Yeah, I like what I've seen also. I always knew he could play.
Yeah.
And actually, we were Mark and I were saying, you know, when he became a free agent, well, maybe the Bulls should try and make a play for him. Well, we couldn't make a $100 million play for him like the Washington Wizards did. But now you get him, and you see he has all the intangibles. He can post up, he can drive. Yeah. He's one of the better 3-point shooters. He plays defense, and he fits within the offensive concepts of the team. You know, he really doesn't need the basketball to score. You don't have to really call his number. He can get his offense through the flow of he can get his points through the flow of the offense. Also, the offense moves so much more smooth with him in the lineup than anybody else that we've had at small forward this year. And if you notice, he frees up Zach LaVine. He frees up Lauri Markkanen. Because now you can't double those guys. You know, before, previous to the trade, they were getting double-teamed. The defense was shifted towards stopping those guys. Well, now you have to worry about Otto Porter. And last night, I think Mark pulled up a stat over the past three games previous to last night. The Bulls were number one in offense in the league.
It's five games,
five games ahead of Houston. So that lets you know right there what that guy has done. He's immediately made you better. I really like him. Also, you know, I don't know if you guys saw the post-game show last night, but he looks like Lionel Richie.
He does. King. Yeah.
You got Stacey King singing Lionel all night long.
I saw Stacey singing that. Wait, I turned the volume down after the first couple words there.
Yeah, it was funny, man. We had fun last night.
It was funny. He had that first half interview with Kelly Krall, and he had a good sense of humor about it. Otto Porter Jr. does look a little bit like a young Lionel Richie. More importantly, Kendall, I mean, he's coming into this situation, and I think that you can tell just by what you've seen. He's a professional. He certainly gives them a outside scoring threat, but he also, in the locker room, a veteran presence that is dependable, but maybe not vocal. How do you get a guy, you've probably been in locker rooms like this, there's going to be a lot expected of him to be an example and maybe be a leader. Maybe that's not his natural personality. He's always been more of a guy who's blended in. Does he have to change that now because of the youth of the Bulls?
No, I don't think he necessarily has to change who he is. I mean, because look at him. One of the other plus things about him, he's only 25 years old, and we forget that because he's been in the league, five, 6 years now. He's very young too, you know, and I think what you have to do, you have to go out in free agency. You have to go get a couple of veterans that can still play, that can provide that leadership. Who knows? Maybe Otto Porter can do it, but to be sure that we have it, if I would go on PAX, I would go out and search for some free agents who could really still play, who would be respected by the young core because of their leadership ability, because of their tenure in the league, and because they can still put the ball through the hoop.
We talk about kind of building a hierarchy, you know, understanding who gets the ball when and who's good at what. Where are they at with that? Where do you feel? I mean, Lauri Markkanen is obviously the centerpiece of the franchise. I don't think anyone would question that. But is if they figured out everything in terms of, you know, I don't know, is Zach able to play with everybody else? Is the, you know, he had a lot on his plate early. I don't know if you develop bad habits. I don't know how you share the ball. I don't know what to make of the way we look at this team.
No. I think that Zach is in a perfect position. You know, let's face it. If the Bulls had a .500 record right now, Zach would be on the All-Star team. I mean, you look at D'Angelo Russell for the Brooklyn Nets, how he has made the All-Star team, and that team is in playoff contention. You know, I think that Zach actually offensively is having a better year than D'Angelo Russell, but the team has a losing record. If you watch Zach last night, the way he handled the basketball late in the game, he had 7 assists. let's not forget, he played point guard for a year when Ricky Rubio went down in Minnesota. Zach, I actually like him at the point guard position, you know, and I don't know if he can play long stints there and really be effective, but for short stints, I really like the way that he handled the basketball, got everybody involved, and most importantly, he and Lauri Markkanen are learning how to play together. You see last night where Lauri Markkanen dribbled the basketball in Zach's direction, and Zach automatically knew to back cut. Okay, and that comes from being on the court with somebody, getting used to how they play and how they pass the ball, where they want the ball on offense. So I think that Zach is in a perfect position along with Lauri Markkanen. Love the Otto Porter trade. And when Wendell Carter comes back, I think the Bulls are in perfect position to really make a leap next year. Hopefully, keep our fingers crossed, we get Zion Williamson, the number one pick in the draft. If not, you know, you go out and you get a Ja Morant. Hopefully, we get one or two of those players. And then we're talking about a team that's ready to really turn around.
And in the free agents period, Kendall, as you mentioned, alluded to earlier, they'll have about $19 to $20 million in cap space. That Otto Porter Jr. kind of fills that other slot, and they were proactive about that. I think I know where you're going with this, but you're a big Derrick Rose guy. I mean, you like the idea of him coming back because you keep mentioning the veteran point guard and the veteran who knows how to play. That's the image in your head when you're talking about that, isn't it?
That is the exact image in my head. I mean, you look at Derrick's numbers last night. Yeah, he's had an ankle sprain, but he comes back last night, has 22 points. I believe 7 assists, leads Minnesota back to victory after they've been struggling. I think that Derrick probably, if he stays healthy the rest of the season, will be the sixth man of the year. You cannot argue with his numbers. I think that he has matured a great deal. Karl Anthony Towns mentioned in an interview a couple weeks back that had it not been for Derrick Rose, he wouldn't have made it through the Jimmy Butler debacle up there and scenario. And unless you know right there, that Derrick has now turned into a vocal leader. We all know here in Chicago when back in his All-Star days that he was a guy that led by example, not necessarily a guy that really talked too much. Well, now he's matured, and everybody looks, the young players look to him for leadership. So, you know, and I think that it would set the fan base on fire if he came back here, especially with this young team that's poised with so much talent to make a playoff run, you know, and who says you can't go home again? Hey, I was able to go back to NBC Sports.
That's Chicago, right. You know what I'm saying? That's right, Kendall. I remember.
Oh, that's great. All right,
hey,
Kendall. Thank you, buddy. Appreciate
Thanks, Kendall.
It.
All right, guys, take it easy.
Take care.
Was it Thomas Wolfe who said that? I don't remember, but somebody did say that. I got to tell you, David, I mean, a lot of Derrick Rose fatigue in this town, and a lot of it with management. That did not end very well. The last season here, they didn't know if he was going to play or not play.
Management or ownership? Because management, yes. Ownership, no. Ownership loves Derrick Rose.
Okay.
I think there's still that. I'm not dismissing it.
When you're getting a phone call from somebody and you don't know, you know, it's not the same guy every day, and you're finding out that Derrick can't play tonight, and I think that's a rough one.
Kendall makes a pretty good point, though. He's revered around the league. For like him or hate him in Chicago, he's revered around the league, and he is a veteran who probably would be on the court a pretty good example for these guys. I don't know that I'm in love with the idea, but I do think it's one to probably entertain.
Wow. That's interesting.
Casey Johnson wrote that a couple weeks ago.
I know he got a lot of
reaction to it, and I don't think that he heard a resounding no to that idea internally. It wouldn't shock me.
All right, we're going to take a minute. We'll be right back. 312-644-6767. Do you like that idea? Does that do anything for you? Mully and Haw on the Score. Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 of the Score. How about Kevin didn't like our AAF question this morning? We got to come up with one for tomorrow now.
Oh, it's a daily exercise until we run out of them.
But it wasn't a question about the AAF. It was a question about the NFL. should they buy or affiliate themselves with this league?
It's a question about football.
Yes.
Kevin's objecting to questions about football. That's okay.
Really?
Yeah.
There's a lot going on in football.
Season's over.
We've got three legitimate football stories
football
today.
Football season really is never over.
Story number one
is
Kareem Hunt signing. That's a big deal because the Bears, were involved in that. And there was a possibility he was going to wind up in Chicago. Now he's in Cleveland.
Big story.
Kyler Murray choosing football over baseball, entering the draft. And I know the Bears don't have a first-round pick or a second-round pick, so maybe that costs us some interest in
the
Chicago.
The Heisman Trophy winner picking football over baseball.
Big story.
On the day that pitchers and catchers report. Big story.
And there is a story out there that the Chicago Bears will be on the road on Thanksgiving next year, and they will be playing the Lions again. And it's such a big story that Taylor Gabriel went on Twitter, and he heard the news. NFL is expecting to make a Bears-Lions game on Thanksgiving Day, and he responded with, "Easy W, don't worry."
Kind of like that.
And he later deleted that tweet, but it was out there.
Okay.
Once it's out there, it's out there.
It's fine. In February, whether it's February or a couple days before, you like a little bit of confidence.
Easy W, don't worry.
You disagree with that? I mean,
I don't know. I got to see what the Lions attempt to do. I think it's bulletin board material.
Now, if we're going to break down the Lions, now that's a little bit too much football.
It's too
early for that.
I'm not breaking down the Lions. But the other
stories are legit. Really
they got a quarterback.
Yeah.
They got a defensive coordinator / head coach. They got a guy in Matt Patricia who came in and did not have the kind of players he wants and maybe alienated everybody in the organization. Presumably, they will go out and try to fill some of the holes on that roster.
Sure.
And try to build a team more in the liking of the head coach, right?
I'm asking just to be a little respectful in this whole process.
And they have a legit offensive coordinator in Daryl Bevel.
They have a man in Matt Patricia who is literally a trained rocket scientist.
Yeah, he doesn't do much for me.
Just kind of sit up. Ask me a question professionally, and I'll answer it.
What school did he go to? He went to some place in New York that is like, you know, the MIT of New York, whatever that might be.
Would be the Rensselaer Polytechnic Institute, not Rensselaer, Indiana.
Listen, no. And I know that sounds funny to some people, but that is a very highly respected school.
It is. Okay, great.
And he's a bit of a
brainiac. You know what? Based on what I've seen of Matt Patricia, NASA's not missing him, okay?
Oh, boy, that's just mean-spirited.
It's not mean-spirited.
You don't like the beard?
Enough with the Lions.
So, Easy W, you're okay
Easy
with
Easy W,
it?
I'm good with that.
I'm not. I'm saying there are reasons to talk about it, and then you throw in the idea that they had better ratings than the NBA. Maybe that's a one-off. Maybe it isn't. I don't think people tuned in. At least I didn't tune in because I knew the AAF
the
was...
The problem
was,
is we're not going to know until the final game because the next time we see the AAF on CBS, I believe, is for a while. I don't think that they're going to go prime time every Saturday night.
They're going on to the secondary CBS.
And those ratings never
Sports
quite.
Network or whatever.
They never match up or measure up to what it is on the big network. So that was a great platform.
But I didn't even know the league. I didn't know much about the league. And I happened upon the game.
You wanted to book every coach.
I just wanted.
You know him, book him.
I want to book the defensive coordinator of the where is it the Orlando whatever the hell they are
no
is
that it? No it's it? The
name the guy
it's Rick Minter is the defensive coordinator for the Birmingham Iron.
Oh, of course. I'm desperate, Dustin, to book the Iron coordinator because he was David's college coach. Wouldn't that be great?
I am not going to say who, but I actually just fired off a request for a head coach of an AAF team.
Oh,
that's terrific. And I think there's a lot of guys out there.
I wonder what Steve Superior will tell us.
I want to know.
He's playing golf. He's busy.
My due diligence of learning everything about the Birmingham Iron that I can, because I can tell you their defense is going to be prepared. Rick Minter is going to have their defense prepared.
I know they must play press coverage. That was an Iron joke.
Very funny. But,
like, you press the shirt. No? Anybody? I'll stop.
It's an ironclad defense.
There you go.
Oh, that's really.
I didn't think I had that.
No, I didn't.
No, I didn't think you had that one in
you. I would never have bought in the fact that you could say that.
You know, Taylor Gabriel can brag about the Bears being, or the Lions being an easy W, but the most interesting thing I heard from a Bears wide receiver in the last week was from Allen Robinson. He was on this station, Bears All Access, with Jeff Joniak and Tom Thayer. He played through fractured ribs.
Let's listen.
Alan, what's different for you this offseason, and where and how will you focus your time?
For me, it's good, you know, being healthy, you know, at this standpoint, and being able to do some things, you know. Still getting back to 100%, you know. I was nursing an injury where I fractured my ribs late in the season last year, you know. So just kind of working through that, you know, and being able to have time to just kind of really work on all aspects of my body, you know, my joints and everything like that, and really hone in onto certain specifics that I want to get accomplished this year as opposed to last year. You know, the main focus was just to get back to 100% and get back on the field.
Fractured ribs.
Yeah.
Late in the season.
You ever break a rib?
I not that I had an x-ray. It felt like it was broken every time I sneezed, but I don't know
if
it
God,
was.
Oh, my God. That is such
I think I would know it if
painful,
it was broken.
No, it's. I think it's you bruised. Probably, yeah.
Who knows?
That is such a painful injury. There is nothing you can do about it. And as you said, you sneeze and you get, you know, a rush of pain like you wouldn't believe. That is a tough one.
That's a tough one given, you know, his position, given the sport that he plays, given the success that he had playing through that. I mean, there's all sorts of things that his best game was against the Eagles, right? He caught 10 passes for 143 yards. And that was with broken ribs.
I'd like to know when he fractured his rib and was he wearing a flak jacket or anything? He must have been, right? I mean, you can't – that doesn't help a ton, but he must have tried something, right?
No, but it's something that he does make you wonder when it happened, how he played through it.
I thought that kid was good enough that I was wondering why the hell aren't they feeding him the ball more. It bothered me that he wasn't more involved in the game plans, and I thought they are – you know, they should be using him more. I didn't realize and again, David – everybody is injured in the NFL. It is not unusual to have surgeries in the postseason. Playing through injury is the key. There are a lot of guys that play through injury, and when you get on the field and when you get the pads on and all the rest of it, then you don't look at a guy and say, "Oh, what's wrong with him?" You say, "He's there. He's got to do his job." I mean, we go back to the Super Bowl and where's the running back and why isn't he getting the ball and what's going on and. You know, I am convinced that he was injured, even if they're claiming that he wasn't. And it's going to be maybe he didn't require surgery. Maybe the knee injury is just something that time will take care of. But it was fairly obvious that Todd Gurley had a physical issue just based on the fact that he stopped contributing to that team.
Well, you said that everyone plays through injury. I think everyone plays through pain. I don't know that everyone plays through injury. And I think there is a difference.
Well, I mean, you can't play when you have a broken leg, but some guys have tried.
Well, you can't play. You're not supposed to play when you have a broken rib, but some guys do.
Apparently somebody tried.
And somebody tried. And somebody did it very well. I mean, he's caught 10 passes. Now, looking at Allen Robinson's game log for 2018, he did not play in week 16. He did not play in the final game of the season. He sat that one out as the Bears sort of kept their players healthy, and everyone understood why. But he was very productive against the 49ers in the last game that he did play in the regular season.
Is that when he broke? I mean, we don't know when
maybe
he fractured the rib.
Six catches, 85 yards.
All right.
It does raise some questions. I had the same reaction to Yusa at times throughout the season. Like, this is a guy who is your best receiver. Why aren't you utilizing him more? You're paying him a lot of money.
He had double-digit targets one time this year. Look, earlier in the year, he had even less usage.
In the regular season, yeah. And then in the playoffs, boom, they looked for him when he was injured, apparently.
Not till the fourth quarter, though, apparently.
You're right.
That's true.
The Tariq Cohen treatment.
Wow.
Coach of the year.
Don't bring it up.
Joe, that's just mean.
Don't bring it up.
He got very a little missed it when that was brought up.
Every time.
Yeah.
After the last game and a few weeks later when he was very upset.
Should that be the opening question of
NFL Combine?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Why the hell scoreboard update. Damn you!
I couldn't do anything for last year for Cubs, you know. I really loved the fans and then this organization, but I couldn't do anything, so I really want to do something for the Chicago and then the Cubs.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio 670 to score. That's the voice of Yu Darvish. He is looking forward to doing something great. And let's get out to Mark Gonzalez. He joins us from spring training with the Cubs in Arizona. Hey, Mark, how are you?
Morning, Mark.
I'm doing well, guys. How are you guys doing?
Always a joy to talk to you. Thanks for jumping on and getting up with us. And, you know, Yu Darvish is a name that I don't know what it signifies to Cub fans. Maybe that's the reason that they can't go after Bryce Harper to some people. Again, they invested a lot of money in him, and he was really a non-factor a year ago. Injury-related, fair enough. Where is he at? Have you noticed a huge change in his attitude? We hear him speaking English there. He's changed. He's trying to be more accessible. You got to appreciate that.
Yeah, and it's not just the fact that he's speaking English. I just see a body language is much more positive. He's moving at a comfortable pace. When I say that, it seemed like last year he was trying to break tackles when he'd go in the clubhouse and just, you know, try to elude people. You know, his head was, he'd look straight ahead, wouldn't make eye contact. I just don't know if he felt, you know, uncomfortable or he was dwelling on his elbow. But so far, even going back to Cubs convention, he looked like a new man. And I think that bodes well, at least for his confidence and the fact that he knows that the Cubs are counting on him to give them, you know, 180 to 200 innings and a lot of quality starts.
Mark, you have a story in this morning's Chicago Tribune, the back page, on Wilson Contreras and him talking yesterday about the motivation and the role that last year's disappointment will play in this year's success. In his mind, it's the most tried and true method of motivating players in sports. And yet, you've been around baseball a long time. In hockey, I get it. In football, maybe. Does this work in baseball? Have you seen it? You know, using a previous year's failure as the impetus for success the following season?
It's a springboard, but let's face it, there are a lot of teams, maybe as many as 30 that say, hey, or 29 that say, hey, we don't like the way it ended. We want to bounce back. Maybe it was good for us to lose. I mean, you could apply that to 29 teams right now. It is certainly in the case of the Cubs, because there are great expectations here and the fact that they did go to the NLCS three consecutive years and didn't make it a fourth, yeah, that can serve as motivation, but I still point to that last month when they let things slip away. That should gnaw on them a lot.
You know, it's interesting because we've been discussing the baseball prospectus stuff and how it came out that the Cubs were going to win 82 games, and then they spent a night debating it and came back and had them winning 81 games. So if that didn't work out. But I guess some of the blame goes to the idea that Contreras does not frame the ball well. At least that's what Dan Bernstein insists. How much does his framing damage the pitching staff, if at all?
Well, they're not a predominantly power pitching staff. At least the rotation isn't. Therefore, these guys need to be sharp, work the corners well, and that's where pitch framing comes in. So it's a great debate because I know there were a couple of officials in the Cubs organization that were debating once over what's more valuable, pitch framing or blocking pitches. And I think that's a great debate. But it just seems now that there's so much focus on pitch framing that yeah, I think there's something to it, but it's not just pitch framing in the case of Wilson. I think if he does a little bit of everything better, they're going to be fine. But the point at all on pitch framing, I think, is a tad unfair, but he does have to get better.
Mark, when the players start to trickle in today and more later in the week, and obviously you look at, is this the Cubs team for 2019? Are they done with shopping? Do they need another bullpen piece? Do you expect them to be active if some of these free agent players start to go? And I guess the big question, the big ticket item would be Craig Kimbrel. Is there any shot of the Cubs getting in on him?
I can't see them getting in on Kimbrel unless they move some money around. To me, right now, I'm still looking at backup catcher. I know it might sound, you know, way down on the list of priorities or needs, but you're always thinking right now in a worst-case scenario, you know, what happens if Wilson goes down? And you got Victor Caratini, switch hitter, nice catcher, but can you rely on him for, you know, a month or so? I'm not so sure. Another guy that's in Camp RC, an interesting study. It spent about 10 years in the minors, then made it to the majors last year with the Angels, left-handed hitter. But is he the answer? I'm not so sure. So that's one area, you know, you look at. Because in the past years, they've been okay with guys, you know, second half add-ons, whether it be, you know, Avalon, and even Rene Rivera didn't play here long, but he was serviceable and he had experience. So I think this team is pretty well set as of now. I think if they would have
had a need for a big ticket guy or even a guy that has a better resume than Brock, then I think they would have addressed it by now.
And I think when we look at the Cubs and we see them in the context of the division, we see the division getting better. And that's one of the things that people kind of wonder about. And we see the other teams, and I agree with you. I think they have a pretty set team. But when Theo comes out after the season and says the hitting is broken, and then they don't really make any great acquisitions or change anything, and the rest of the division is loading up, it makes you wonder if they've done enough and if they can repair from within.
Yeah, and I think they're putting a lot of trust in the current makeup of this roster, especially the guys that had subpar or uneven seasons. You know, guys like Happ, Almora kind of tailed off in the second half. Schwarber made some improvements, but I don't think he's where he wants to be. You know, losing Bryant for 50 games and not getting the power from him. I think these guys will bounce back. A lot of them will. I won't say all of them will because it just doesn't happen. But for them to have two or three guys bounce back, it'd probably be the equivalent of acquiring a seasoned hitter.
Mark, you've written about this in the past, and I think Jason McLeod keeps talking about how the Cubs are ready to start seeing some dividends paid on the pitching development, on the young arms in the minor league system. Maybe they're not going to be ready soon, but the ones on the way, do you trust them? Is that a bright spot for the Cubs organization? Because that's not something they have done well in recent years.
It could be in the immediate future, or I say immediate future. You know, they had really high hopes for Azalea. I mean, he could have been the equivalent of adding, I won't say a Jesse Chavez, but pretty close, just because he had a pretty good arm. Doesn't throw, 96, 97, but he's got a pretty good array of pitches. And I think he'll make that next step this season, probably mid-season. He needs to build up some innings. And then the two guys that have had a cups of coffee in the past, Dylan Maples and James Norwood, I think this is their time to really say, hey, I'm going to be a part of this bullpen the way Carl Edwards Jr. did a few years ago. And I think those are big seasons for these guys, just to make that next step and become bona fide big league relievers and not doing that shuttle between Des Moines and here.
So we talk about the guys that are there, and we talk about Contreras and go over that. Schwarber's also there. And he's, I presume not catching anyone, but you look at that guy and you think about, the legend of Babe Schwarber and the way he came up and everything he did. And then obviously the World Series coming back from the knee and all of that. And the happily ever after hasn't been so happy. And I think his value becomes even more important, Mark, if indeed there's an inevitability to the DH in the National League. So where is he at? Where is his mind at? How much better can he be? What step will he take?
I think he's in a promising place right now, and I say that because he did make improvements, with batting average and on-base percentage. Now, the next steps for him are to improve that, but also cut down on a strikeout rate, swing and miss rate, and get better against lefties. I didn't realize this, so I looked it up yesterday. I think he hit 25 of his 26 homers against righties. Hmm. His splits weren't too radical in terms of batting average, but there are things he needs to improve on, and I think he will improve on. He's shown it last year that he can bounce back, and I think the next step is for him to become even better there. As an outfielder, I think he's now become an average outfielder, and I think that's not a bad thing, because we all know about his issues the previous season. So there's a lot there. I think the carrot's still dangling for him, and I think he's going to get after it.
Mark, what's the plan for the Cubs in terms of Addison Russell's arrival? Is there an expectation about what day he will come and how he will address the media if he does?
Well, it'll be within the next week, and I think that the Cubs expect him to address the media. That's part of the process of him coming back or having a chance to come back. He's going to have to address all these issues publicly. It's part of the process, and I expect it to happen within the week.
That's going to be fascinating, just because of the way that
will they be wanting to hear something specific, Mark? I mean, will they need to hear something before they feel better about moving forward? Is that also a box that they need to check?
Yeah, I think so, especially when when the details of the incident first surfaced, you know, he issued a statement, you know, denying them. And then after Major League Baseball ruled on the 40-game suspension, you know, he issued a statement, you know, accepting the suspension. But it was a statement. He has to say it publicly. I think his body language will be, you know, evaluated then and see just how sincere his statements are.
Hmm. I'm also curious. There's a lot of things that happen in the offseason.
A lot of curiosity, yeah.
But not a lot of them to do with the players on right. the yeah. field. I mean, he's one, but the other stuff, the Islamophobia stuff from Joe Rickett, I mean, these are all things that people will be asked about and that will be addressed at some point. I don't know that all of this is hovering over the team in the same way that maybe the Edison Russell thing is, but these are just things that are going to come up in normal conversation, and people are going to want to know what the players think, and I'm curious to see how the team sort of debriefs them before that process starts.
Yeah, and there are a lot of balls that are being juggled, even the front office or business operations, with how much that the new channel is going to cost and
right.
the distribution rates. And
yes.
then we have the mobile ticketing that some fans weren't happy with. Interesting times over there.
Yeah, because you have that, you balance with all the controversy of the offseason, and you have Joe Maddon, who needs to get off to a good start.
That's right.
And if these things serve as a distraction and get in the way of that, I mean, there's all sorts of things to talk about, to write about. It's going to be a fascinating few weeks in Mesa.
Absolutely. It's just, you know, I haven't even thought about the first month of the season, but you take a peek, and there's Atlanta, you know, the second series of the year, and then you go to Milwaukee. So you have a few heavyweights right off the bat, and you hate to get too amped up right away, but like Theo said, in October, you want to treat
yep.
the game on Wednesday in June the same as you do the 162nd game of the year.
The sense of urgency that he talked about, it's going to be interesting. And, you know, Joe knows what his status is, future free agent, as he likes to look at it. But that's a fascinating one to watch, too. How, you know, Joe claimed he's going to do more coaching as opposed to just managing. He's going to get more involved. I'll be very curious to see how that works out in spring training, Mark.
Yeah, I mean, forget about the Bear Bryant Tower. He's going to be, you know, moving around a lot more than he usually does. So I'm curious to watch him, you know, apply those methods. I mean, he's done it subtly, or sometimes he'll come out, you know, 4.5 hours for a game and evaluate a hitter, maybe step in the cage and make a few suggestions. But from what it sounds like, he's going to be really hands-on, so we'll have to see how that plays out.
Great talking to you, Mark. Thanks a ton. We really appreciate it.
Thanks,
Mike.
Mark.
Take care, guys.
Yep.
That's Mark Gonzalez from the Chicago Tribune covering the Cubs, doing a great job. And
too bad there's nothing to write about out there.
Oh, my gosh. Seriously. you must be salivating.
No.
Mully and Haw, Chicago Sports Radio, 6-7 to the Score.
T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.